Hello and welcome to the new season of the Honey Kids Asia podcast, bringing you the parenting playbook. My name's Jaz and I'm a mum of two toddlers and the editor at Honey Kids Asia. We're excited to kick off the season with engaging discussions and expert guests who will help us navigate the ups and downs of modern parenting. In today's episode, we're exploring a topic that many parents are looking for insights and advice on. Is it ADHD or something else? For this discussion, I'll be joined by Jolene Lim, mum of two and co-director of Chapter Zero Singapore, and Kavita Manokaran, senior psychologist at International Medical Clinic. Enjoy! Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. This is our Parenting Playbook live session. Second one that we've done. The first one was back in October. So now we've got another one and we're talking about all things ADHD. And we've got both Jolene Lim from Chapter Zero Singapore and also Kavita Manokaran from International Medical Clinic. And we'll be talking about everything that has to do with ADHD in children and maybe even adults. So Jolene, I think you can start off with a little bit about yourself and your background as well. Tell us more about, you know, your what you do at Chapter Zero, as well as a little bit about your experience with having a child with ADHD.
Sure. Thank you so much, Azana. Yeah, I run a great organization called Chapter Zero, and we basically are a community-led respectful parenting group. And we run workshops and support programs for all parents. And, you know, the basis of everything is with caring for children with respect and care and being responsive to their underlying feelings and needs, which covers a lot of different aspects. And for me personally, when I became a mom 9 years ago with my firstborn, you know, 2 years in, I realized that I didn't want to go down the traditional parenting route. And so that's when I discovered respectful parenting, and I, you know, joined in the community, and it really changed my life in so many ways. And later on, when my son was diagnosed with ADHD at age 7, leading up to it, I realized that my respectful parenting approach actually helped him in so many ways. So when we did the diagnosis with the psychologist, he was diagnosed with high severity of ADHD, and yet she actually said that his ability to regulate his emotions was also yet very high. So yeah, I really want to share that with everyone. And also I do a lot of support work with parents, regardless of whether they're caring for children with neurodivergence or not. But yeah, it is so challenging to have children with neurodivergent needs. So we have a lot of communities available, which I'm sure you'll share the links later on. And I'm looking forward to also learning more from Dr. Kavita today.
I'm sure. Yeah, I think it's neurodivergent children are so different from neurotypical children, especially, and, you know, growing up, especially as like millennials or older parents as well, like we never really were exposed to much of that growing up. So we also learning along with them as well. So thank you so much, Jolene. I think we'll dive a little bit deeper into your personal experience as well. But over to Kavita. Thank you so much for joining us again today. So you're from International Medical Clinic. We would love to hear a little bit more about your background, and also, like, what's the easiest way you would say is the, like, a one-liner of what you would explain ADHD, what ADHD actually is, if somebody were to ask.
One-liner. Wow. Okay. Okay, so maybe I'll introduce myself very quickly. Yeah, so I'm Kavita, one of the senior clinical psychologists with International Medical Clinic. I see children and adolescents and their parents as well for assessments, psychological assessments, and therapy. Yeah. So one of the common ones that we see here is the ADHD assessments, right? Because it is more prevalent now, more people know about it, and the difficulties are also very tough to manage. You know, I think Jolene already mentioned it very well just now, right? A one-liner for ADHD would be, I don't know, to be very honest, you know, we usually say, am I moving too fast or am I moving too slow, right? Because you have the hyperactive, but you also have the inattentive types, the two different types. So am I moving too fast or am I moving too slow? Yeah, I think that is what I would say is ADHD.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think a good way to kind of understand a little bit more about it is like to throw it back to you, Jolene. How did you first recognize the signs of your son's condition before you actually got the diagnosis?
Okay. So I actually did support some family members with ADHD prior to seeing it in my son. So I was already aware of certain symptoms and traits. For example, hyperfocus, impulsivity. And also what I saw in my son was frequent and intense meltdowns and dysregulations. And dysregulations basically mean like imbalance in the body and brain, and it's very overwhelming. And then, you know, sometimes parents often see it as like throwing tantrums or being difficult, or shutting down, screaming, crying, you know, aggression, all these behaviors. And the thing is that it was quite hard to kind of pinpoint it, because that is also very developmentally normal behaviors in children. But for me, I was like, why is this so extra hard for me and for him? Yeah. So when we finally got the diagnosis, everything just made sense. And I also educated myself a lot more, and I'm still learning as I go. And actually, I have a one-liner, which is from Dr. Ned Hallowell, which is very similar to what you're sharing, Kavita. So he described it as having an ADHD brain is like having a Ferrari engine, but with bicycle brakes.
Oh, wow.
And when I heard that, I was like, oh my God, that's so true. So I wrote that down before today.
Nice. Yeah. So I would say it's like being on overdrive all the time, but then having a little bit of a challenge in trying to, you know, manage or like compartmentalize a little bit better. Yeah.
Like once you start, it's very, like for my son, like I have to be very mindful and aware of his state of his emotions and his body at all times, because I have to like look out for when he's going into overdrive, because it is very hard for him to slow down. Yeah. So when I heard that line, I was like, yes, this is exactly what it feels like. And so it's not that they don't want to slow down, but they just have difficulty for their brain to be able to dial down, I guess, you know. Yeah, gradually. So there are lots of things that I had to learn on how to support him on this, yeah.
Yeah, and you saw that, I mean, I would say you probably saw that a lot at home, but how did that actually affect him in his behavior in school or in class?
So I would say he kind of presents very differently in different environments. At home, I would say he has the space and the freedom to be his true self. So that's when I see him expressing himself very freely. If he's in a play environment where he also feels safe, he will also express himself very freely. However, specifically to my son, in school, he does tend to try to follow the rules and be on his best behavior. And so on one hand, I'm thankful that he has that adaptive ability. But on the other hand, I also want to be mindful that he doesn't feel like he has to completely shut up, you know, parts of himself, you know. So I kind of try to balance it where he's able to function in school and in certain spaces, but also be free to be himself and be true to his spirit. Yeah. And different children different parents report that their children do behave very differently, and some children don't have that adaptive behavior in school, and that can be really, really hard, which I'm sure that Dr. Kavita would know more about this. Yeah.
I think this would be a great segue, Dr. Kavita, to start talking about how often you would say you actually get approached by parents who suspect that their children have it, and like usually what exactly is the first step that they have to do in order to try and manage?
How often would be quite frequent now. Yeah. Particularly sometimes when school starts and a month into school, you'll see an increase in the behaviors changing as well in school, right? Sometimes the teachers also give feedback to the parents a month into school to say, oh, these are some of the difficulties we're having. He is also doing these things, right? And that feedback also helps parents to realize something's not right. Something's going on here. Okay, so then they come in, and one of the first things they usually talk about is what Jolene has mentioned, actually, temper tantrums, emotional difficulties. Sometimes they say, very different child. In school, he's almost perfect. And at home, he is so naughty. you know, running around or not listening to my instructions at all. I can repeat the instructions 4 times and he will not listen to it, you know. So these are some of the examples you will hear from the parents in the difficulties they are having with the child, you know. And sometimes when you talk to the children, they'll also say the same thing. Sometimes they'll say, I feel like my brain is moving faster than my body, you know. And that's one thing that I've heard from quite a few children, right? Like, my brain is just going a lot faster than my body. I cannot keep up. Yeah. So these are some of the things that you hear initially, even before you go down the path of ADHD.
Right, right. Yeah. I think that's it's a very similar description to what Jolene mentioned about having a Ferrari brain but not having the right brakes for them as well. I think one of the misconceptions I hear a lot is that modern pressures or like even daily habits, like different eating habits and behaviors and stuff, actually contribute to the higher rates of diagnosis for ADHD and other neurodivergent conditions in children. Do you see any correlation in that, or do you think it's more of the fact that we are just hyper aware of like conditions like this just thanks to social media and stuff?
I think our modern ways, our diets, our foods have changed a lot from even 10 years ago, right? And I'm not sure whether how much they are contributing to a neurobiological, neurodevelopmental condition, right? They may worsen the behaviors. And if you give sugar and candy at home a lot more, the kid is going to be very hyperactive at home, correct? They may worsen the behaviors. But I think it's more about the fact that there's a lot more talk about ADHD now in our social media sites. You know, you go through Instagram, the shorts, a lot of people posting about it. You understand and learn more. You're exposed more to the symptoms and ideas of ADHD now as compared to before, right? So as you're exposed to more information, you're also more aware, you know, you're observing your kids. You're more aware of what's going on as well. Is this naughty or is this something else going on? Right. So I'll lean more towards the second one, where we're more aware of it, leading to more observations, more understanding, and then seeking help to clarify and confirm.
I just want to share my experience, you know, now that I am sort of part of the ADHD community, even though I don't have it myself, but I really enjoy sort of learning from the adults who have ADHD, because I want to, it's kind of my crystal ball towards my son's future, right? Like, I want to see how I can support him to cope as he grows older and, you know, reach self-sufficiency. And a lot of the adults that I spoke to, they were never diagnosed. They only were diagnosed much later in life. And so they kind of just were left to their own devices, and they just sort of figured out coping tools on their own. And sadly, a lot of them have been left to feel like there was something wrong with them, or they feel very negatively about themselves, you know. And even my son in school, he labeled himself as being a stupid kid or not a smart kid or being lousy and bad. So I really had to work very hard to kind of counter these labels that he internalized in himself, even if they were not expressed to him. And actually, sadly, they also were expressed to him. So yeah, I feel that having that awareness and education is so important, so that more adults and children can understand that there is nothing wrong with them, that their brains just are wired differently, and we need coping tools and support and acceptance and understanding so that we can coexist as a neurodiverse society. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that. I think the acceptance part is a really big part of it as well. And your respectful parenting background would definitely really come into play for that also. So since, you know, knowing about him having ADHD and like managing his behaviors and things like that, like, have you found any good ways to actually speak to his educators to help manage his behavior in class?
I think I've had different experiences with different educators. Interestingly, in kindergarten, he was in a school that was very nurturing. So when I told them I was going to send him for assessment at some point, they were telling me, no, don't worry, it's okay. Yeah, he's a bit slow, but he's progressing. So that is important. And I appreciated that reassurance from them. And I think it's good to have educators who kind of manage parents' anxieties. But at the same time, because I knew And I knew about the symptoms and that maybe they don't see certain things that I see at home. So I had the confidence to go like, no, there are certain things that you're not aware of. And so I am sending him for assessment. Unfortunately, I've also had educators who did label him and because they did not understand, because there was a gap of knowledge and awareness on their part. So they labeled him as weird, strange, you know, his behaviors as being like, yeah, unusual, which maybe they are, but you know, it's not helpful to have these labels. So I try not to take it personally and I try to explain it to them factually and like send them articles because I'm just a parent. So I will send them, you know, medical articles by doctors, which are more, I guess, credible. And then it helps them frame their behaviors and understand that, oh, okay, this is not because he's being naughty, but he's actually trying to regulate himself. You know, like by the fidgeting, by moving, so he has a lot high needs of movement and things like that. So it's really an ongoing conversation. We actually transferred schools for my son and now he's in a school that is very inclusive and they are all trained on neurodivergence. It is not a local school. Yeah. So, and unfortunately it's very high cost. So sadly it's not accessible to many people. So I really, my heart goes out to the fact that this is not an easily accessible resource to everyone. And I feel that it should be. Yeah. And it's so different over here. When I entered the school and during the open house, they were trying to educate the parents on neurodivergence and how the brain works. And I was like, oh yes, finally somebody who's speaking my language. Like I felt like an alien trying to explain like the ways of my my son for the longest time, and now finally somebody understands, and it just became so much easier. So yeah, it's really, really depends on the individual and how aware they are and how accepting they are.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a difference between, like, you know, the private school route, like the way your son is in, and then you've got the MOE school route, public schools that try their best, you know, now that especially we've got a lot more students that are being diagnosed with multiple different neurodivergent conditions and challenges. And I know that each school now has their own, I can't remember what the term is, but an aid, right? And Kavita, I think you did mention when we were chatting that you actually do help with assisting some of these educators to have the right tools in order to help these students in big public school settings like this. So yeah, if you want to talk a little bit about that.
Yes, yes, yes. So like Jolene said, the school help, school interventions are very important. Private schools are equipped and more educated, but our local MOE schools are also very good. Some of them are very good in catching up. All schools, private or local, they do have special needs officers, allied educators, counselors. You know, these are the three main groups you will see. And as long as they're willing to work with us or me on that particular child that we've diagnosed and be open to ideas, because each child may need a different form of intervention and recommendation. Correct. So we do a lot of the educating, you know, from a clinical perspective, but we try to explain it to them and what they will see in the classroom. Is it regulation? Is it misbehavior? You know, and all that. And the strategies that can work, practically work in the classroom, because sometimes teachers are busy. They may not have time to do everything, right? But we try to adapt the strategies that will suit them in the classroom with the help of special needs officers, allied educators, counselors, right? So this is an ongoing conversation, you know. It has to change every 6 months as the child grows up and the needs are different as well. Yeah. So this is something that is highly recommended. You know, whether you get a diagnosis followed by all these interventions, you need to work with the school. You know, they spend so long in the school hours. We want them to have a good experience, right? And if that involves educating teachers or even coming up with strategies for them, then that's the way we should go.
Yeah, I agree with that. Thank you so much, Kavita. Yeah, we've also got a comment here from I Am Janice Hart. She said, agreed, these days people are very easy to judge kids with more needs, and she totally understands. When there's kindness from others, of course, it's better. You know, and I think the both of you can probably attest to that, Jolene especially. How does your... I think we've missed out in the beginning to mention how old your son actually is now. And yeah, and how does he do with, you know, friend groups and all that. Does his ADHD get in the way of any of that?
Okay, so he is 9. He just turned 9 2 months ago. And I was aware that he might have ADHD since he was in maybe kindergarten. Suspected since young, because of the intense dysregulations. But it kind of became a bit more, it became more confirmed as he got older when he was dealing with schoolwork and things like that. He got diagnosed at age 7. So that was more like a validation and getting a bit more support. In terms of friendship groups, I think because ever since I knew that he was probably going to be diagnosed with ADHD, I was very intentional with the way I talked about neurodiversity, and I would share with him about how, and even his sister, because she also has to live with him and understand him, right? So I would talk about how different brains work differently, regardless of, you know, there was no mention of ADHD. I just talked about how everyone is unique. Every brain is unique. Everyone has strengths and weaknesses. And because I knew he would go in, and schools can be very competitive, so I would say things like, if you have a strength, it's so that you can help other people. And if you have a weakness, you look for someone who has that strength to help you. So I really wanted to encourage that attitude of like collaboration and, you know, supporting each other. And we really do need to support each other as a community, whether it's parents and children. I also very intentionally made friends with other moms with neurodivergent children. So one of his best friends has ASD, autism, and another friend, child has some learning difficulties as well. But honestly, they don't really know and care about each other's conditions. They just enjoy playing games together and they connect on different things. So he would look out more for like, oh, this friend is very good for gaming. This friend, I love talking to him. This friend, she's very kind to me. And this friend, he's just so hilarious. He's just so funny, you know, so we would talk about these qualities and you know, about what he enjoys about each person and also, of course, about how he is as a friend. And there's so many conflicts that I've had to manage as well with these boys. Oh, my gosh. But yeah, having like-minded moms who also don't take things personally is so helpful. And I feel like we are coaching our boys on learning how to communicate and express themselves, how to take space and take some time and space apart to cool down. And then, you know, it's very beautiful to see them come back together and problem solve together. So our kids are really very capable. We just need to give them that support and guidance, and they will thrive with that. Yeah,
I agree. I love that about kids. You know, it's like when they meet at the playground and then they're like so engrossed playing with this stranger, and then after that they come back to us and we're like, so what's your friend's name? I don't know. You know, because they're busy playing. That's not at the top of their mind at all, and they really focus on like what exactly they're doing together, which is more important to them. So I love that. So we got a comment from Janice again, and she asked, how to know if your kid has ADHD if they are only about 4 to 5 years old? I think Kavita, you might be able to take this one.
Okay, I think Jolene did share a little bit just now from her first-hand perspective, right? 4 to 5 years old, we have to remember that they are developmentally still growing and learning, right? So you'll see a lot of emotional dysregulation, more than usual, right? Instead of crying for maybe 5-10 minutes, they take about 20 to 30 minutes to try and calm down. You'll see an increase in misbehaviors, right? If it's the impulsivity is present, then you'll see a lot of the impulsivity come up as well. They will snatch toys from their friends maybe, or they will just leave things everywhere around. A lot of the disorganization also comes up when they're 4 to 5 years old. You tell them, please go clean your room, and you have to keep repeating it. You know, you teach them how to clean their room, but they still have difficulty with the disorganization. You know? So some of these may come up. And even after teaching your child how to do that particular skill, they still struggle with it, right? That's what you would see in about 4 to 5 years old. In school, it may not come out as much because a lot of the schools, they're not formal setting. You know, we don't have a structured timetable for them. It's a lot more play. It's a lot more encouragement, right? So teachers will be saying, oh, he's okay. He's just by himself in the corner. Or he's okay. He's just playing rough with his friends, right? So that can be a quite a tough gauge. But at home, you will see those behaviors that I mentioned just now a lot more at that age. Yeah.
Right, right. Thanks so much. I think we can also go back to what you mentioned previously about how, you know, the care also adapts as the children grow. So with the students or children that you see regularly at the clinic, how long do you actually see them for from the beginning when the parents come to you and say like, you know, oh, I think my child has this and that, he needs some help with, you know, support in regulating himself in this certain way. Like how long before, I don't know, the care that you give that child basically ends or kind of continues more at home and they don't have to see you as often?
Okay, so first, always get a diagnosis to be very clear. And then after that, in terms of the care that we give, it includes like social emotional care, like what Jolene is giving, right? So teaching them social skills, teaching them emotional regulation skills. Depending on the child, it can go on for a few sessions, spend out over 2 to 3 months, yeah? But after teaching the kids these skills, we also tell the parents what we've taught their kids so that they have the skills as well to continue that at home, which I think is very important, correct? The skills are learned by both the children as well as the parents, right? So after a short term of therapy sessions or intervention sessions, the parents feel empowered enough to continue those skills at home, right? So you're looking at about short 2 to 3 months of interventions, right, learning the skills and seeing if it works for them as well, right? And then we can stop after that. Sometimes they do come back a few months later to just touch base and see, okay, this has changed, what can we do, right? And then we just do another 2-3 sessions to help them with that. And then they learn new skills to adapt to a change in their lives or a developmental growth they've had, right? But also the parents also learn new skills at the same time. And then they go, right? So that's what I would say is going on to your answer, because it's important for the parents to also learn the skills. What do you think, Jolene?
So I think in the beginning, because when he was very young, it was mainly me consulting the psychologist and understanding what's going on with him and how I can support him. And then, of course, when he got assessed, he saw a psychologist himself. But beyond that, it is a lot of the work actually rests on my shoulders. But now that he's older, he is seeing a psychologist himself, and I think he is also learning more from the teachers and the counselors in school. You know, he's 9, so he is he's getting more independent and reaching in what we call individuation, the stage of where they're becoming individuals and preparing for adulthood, right? Yeah, so I think it really depends on the needs of the family and the parents and children. And I just want to say that, you know, regardless of whether there is a neurological condition, I would say to all parents, if you are struggling, regardless of whether it is ADHD or, you know, whatever behavioral challenge that you're really struggling with, as long as you're struggling, I would say it warrants, you know, you deserve to get the help and support that you need. Because it is very challenging just to parent in this day and age. There's overwhelming amount of information. There's very high expectations of parents and caregivers. So just for your peace of mind, just to get that quick support, get the support you need, ask for help, you know, talk to a community, reach out online. There are a lot of options online. There are a lot of resources in Singapore. Yeah, and there are a lot of communities that can help sort of expedite that troubleshooting process and give recommendations to doctors like Kavita or explain the process, because that handholding can be so helpful and so assuring and saves a lot of time and effort in our very, very busy and hectic parenting lives. So yeah, just get the help that you need regardless. Yeah.
Thank you, Jolene. I think that's really, you know, it's really, it's so heartwarming to see parents like you really championing the respectful parenting and also being so understanding and accepting of children with such neurodivergent challenges. And also, like, you know, I love what you shared about explaining to both your kids, even your daughter who, you know, doesn't necessarily have such challenges, to understand just in a general broader sense about like how everybody is different. And I think, you know, we can totally go on for a lot longer about siblings who have to also live with siblings with special needs. I think that's a whole other conversation that we can get into another time. But yeah, thank you so much. I think this is a really nice wrap up for the conversation. Thank you both. It's been such a fruitful discussion. I hope everybody who's tuned in got some really good pointers as well from both Jolene and Kavita also. Jolene, you have the floor. Can you let us know where exactly our followers can find you, and if there are any communities, groups, support groups that you recommend for fellow parents who are also seeking support, feel free to let us know.
Sure, thank you so much. Just a big shout out to the community that supported me, which is Unlocking ADHD. They're doing such wonderful work for adults and for parents and for kids of ADHD. A lot of really great sort of diagnostic sort of workbooks and information packets and gatherings and things like that. So big shout out to them for supporting me. For Respectful Parenting, you can find me on find us on Chapter Zero. We're on IG and Facebook. We also have a Facebook group. I set up a Facebook group for Respectful Parents for neurodiverse families in Singapore. So that's the name of the group, which the link can be shared as well. So yes, please feel free to reach out to me as well. I have an IG account, The Learning Parent SG, and I do share some of my experiences with my children and with ADHD on that account as well. Thank you so much for having me today.
Thank you, Jolene. And over to you, Kavita. You have the floor as well. Let us know where our followers can find you and what other areas you oversee in your practice that you are happy to accept patients with. Yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone. And it was really lovely to hear from a parent herself as well, Jolene. Yeah, I think that's very important. Yeah. So we are at International Medical Clinic, the psychology team. We also have general practitioners here who also see our children and adolescents. We are located at Camden, but online, we have the website, we have the IG, the Facebook that you can also find us. Now, who else do we see? So our general practitioners actually see all kinds of medical difficulties. You know, you bring your child in, they will see the child and the parent also. For psychologists, we see any struggles that you have with children and adolescents. So be it social media addiction, bullying, mood disorders, or any kind of body image difficulties, right? To diagnostic assessment. So we do ADHD, autism, and learning disorder diagnostic assessments as well, right? So the first step you have to take is make an appointment and come talk to us. Yeah. And then we'll guide you from there on how to move forward.
Thank you so much. All right. Thanks, ladies. We've got Jolene Lim and Kavita Manokaran. Thank you again. And thanks to everybody that joined us to ask questions and also give us support on this conversation as well. Really hope that you join us for the next one as well. And if you can always come back to our Instagram account to refer back to this conversation that we had and check out what other pointers that we have both on the account and also on Instagram as well. Don't forget to follow both Chapter Zero and International Medical Clinic on all the platforms that we mentioned previously. We'll also be shouting them out on our article as well. So yeah, thanks so much. We'll see you at the next one. We're hopefully having another parenting playbook session in December, and then we'll probably see you there. Thanks, Kavita. Thank you, Jolene.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Honey Kids Asia podcast, bringing you the parenting playbook. We hope you found our conversation helpful. Don't forget to catch our upcoming Instagram live sessions, where we'll dive into more important topics with experts and parents of diverse backgrounds. Head to @HoneyKidsAsia on Instagram for updates and to sign up for the countdown to our next live sessions. All the details can be found in the show notes. For more parenting tips and resources, head to HoneyKidsAsia.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.